That is the way things are.
I'm Gordon Comstock, and I want to start things off today with the tail end of a letter, an email letter I had written to my last anti-vaccination pro-truth guest that I had on, Wendy Lydell. This is not because I like the sound of my own voice, it's just because I tend to be a better writer than speaker. Here goes. They once laughed at Dr. James Lind because he said vitamin C cured scurvy. Then they persecuted him. They once laughed at Dr. Semmelweis because he told the doctors and his hospital to wash their hands in between seeing patients. Then they persecuted him. They once laughed at Galileo because he said that the earth goes round the sun. Then they persecuted him. I bet that there was some guy somewhere in Rome who tried to warn the town plumbers not to change the city's old water pipes to these brand new lead jobs. And I bet they laughed at him, and I bet they persecuted him. Mankind learns nothing, only the dates and the names change. Our guest today, well, my wife and I and guests like my guest today, Mary Toko, we're trying to warn people about this, what we believe is a colossal medical mistake of the past century, vaccinations. And we're being laughed at, we're being persecuted. Yes, we are being persecuted, we may go into that. But our guest today has a fantastic DVD telling you the truth about vaccinations. The DVD is called Are Vaccines Safe? She is, I believe she's got 26 years of research into this. Her name is Mary Toko. Mary, welcome aboard.
So glad to be here. Thank you.
Now, Mary, you know, it's kind of funny. When I bought your DVD, I was on a website where they had a number of DVDs. I bought this other one that was, I would say the website touted it a little more highly than yours. I think yours had just maybe was newer. So I bought that one, and then I bought yours as kind of like plan B in case this other one didn't work out. And when I got them both, my wife and I watched the first one, and it was okay. And I won't say who it is. I don't want to disparage anybody. But then we watched yours, and that was exactly what we were after. Yours became plan A. This is the one we want to show people. Great DVD. Are Vaccines Safe?
Thank you.
Mary, how did you get involved in this movement?
Well, I had the opportunity to learn all about vaccines back in the early, late 70s before I had my children. At that time, I was living in Spartanburg, South Carolina. My fiancé, who became my husband, was in college at Sherman College of Chiropractic, and we learned a lot about the dangers of vaccines. Even though there wasn't a lot of information out there, the philosophy didn't make sense to us. It didn't make sense to us to put toxic things into the human body in a very unnatural way in hopes of having some kind of immune response. There was enough information available that gave us the sign that something big and bad is going to come out of this. This is not natural, and it's not the way God intended it. So we made the decision to not vaccinate our children. Our first child was born in 1980. She is now 27 years of age, and we've had 5 children since. And none of our children received vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
And we went back to Michigan and opened office in 1981, and I began to share information with parents at church, and, you know, we'd be sitting in the nursery, of course, nursing our babies or feeding our babies, and the mothers would be talking about how sick their children were and on what antibiotics they were on, and I began to share with them that there's a better way, you know, and they didn't receive it very well. In the early 80s, mid-80s, it was very politically incorrect even back then to say you didn't vaccinate. In fact, I found that people ostracized me and actually avoided me just because I gave them another way of looking at things. So for quite a while, I didn't do a whole lot about it. And then in 1994, Michigan was going to pass a bill to remove our philosophical exemptions, which means we would lose a very important critical right in our state to say no to vaccines. And I'm sure we can talk about the rights that people do have, but this was one that is near and dear to my heart because basically it says for any reason I can opt out of the vaccines, and that's a very precious right. So I got busy. I called the chiropractic community and said, guys, we have a serious problem here. What can we do about it? They said there's a woman whose nephew died after the DPT vaccine. She wants to get a group going. And so we got together and formed Michigan Opposing Mandatory Vaccine. And basically, we went into our capital, which is Lansing, Michigan, and we, along with all the chiropractors, midwives, and people who believed that we should have this right, were able to defeat this bill. And I was asked to testify. I testified as a mom of, at that time, 4 children, and that was, I would say, my first big public speaking event, because what I did was I went up before the Government and Health Policy Committee of like 15 people, and I presented every book that I had read on the subject and all my research, asking them if they had seen this information, had they read this information, and every one of them shook their head no. And my whole point was, how can you take away our rights as parents to make this decision when you haven't even gotten the information yourself?
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed educating them, and I found that there's power in getting involved. And from that day forward, I dedicated myself to talking to parents. I didn't care whether they were open to hearing me or not. I just said, I'm going to share with everyone I can about this issue because people just don't know. And I will say, I did talk all around Michigan. I would drive halfway across the state and talk to a little 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 group people. And it was very discouraging because back then people didn't really want to know.
Yeah.
Plus, we didn't have the information that we have now. And then when Congressman Burton started doing the hearings in Washington in 2000, everything changed for me. Now I get calls from all over the country to speak. I, of course, made the DVD. I've dedicated my life to really reaching as many parents as I can. And so that's how I got started. Just my feelings are I'm grateful that I had the information, and now the way that I give back is I want parents to have the right to make an informed up with injured children.
That's really, I don't know about you, but that's really maybe the most frustrating part of it is you tell even your friends, and they don't want to know.
Mm-hmm. Many don't, but you know what? I hand out my cards everywhere I go. If I'm at the local grocery store, you know, the local, you know, drugstore, dime store, everywhere I go, the beach, the parks, when I see a mom pregnant or with young children, I approach her and give her my card and tell her that it's very important she make an informed decision. You know, here's some information for you, and I give them just enough to wet their, you know, palate. And it used to be where parents would kind of say no thank you and walk away, or they'd take the card and you knew that they never did the research. Now, parents grab the card and say, oh my gosh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, because I know, I see what's going on. I see all these sick kids around me. I've seen children that were developing well and became autistic.
Mm-hmm.
All my sister's children are sick, and parents are so ready and so willing now to do just a little research that I very rarely ever get turned down. In fact, I hear people say more than ever now, oh, I'm not doing those toxic shots. Are you kidding me? I've done my research. So it's very
encouraging
for me.
Yeah,
I'm really
excited.
Well,
Mary, doctors, do they have the time to research what's in the shots? Do they even know what's in the shots?
My best guess is no, they do not. And I can say this because on my DVD, I have a gentleman by the name of Dr. Philip DeMille. He lives in Ohio. He has 2 medical degrees. He's a toxicologist, of all things, as well as a standard MD. And unfortunately, he vaccinated his only son, and his son got sicker with each group of shots and ended up progressing into severe autism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on my DVD, he states that we are not given this information, that nobody ever goes into any of the information that Mary Toko exposes. And my biggest complaint is they go to medical schools, which are funded and owned by drug companies. They only get what the drug companies want them to get. And, of course, they're dedicated to their career. They believe that, you know, that vaccines is a good thing and that they build the immune system. And it's basically not even scientific. It's all a theory.
Yeah.
So it's, more and more doctors are, though, are jumping ship and basically not promoting vaccines. Many, many hundreds of them now around the country, if not thousands, are beginning to see the problems with it in their own practices, and unfortunately, many of them, their own children, have been the victims of the vaccine toxicity and have become very ill. And we have, you know, famous sports people. We have actors in Hollywood now. We have the physicians on I think it's called the Physicians and Surgeons Association with over 7,000 members who now believe that the vaccines are not good. So we have a lot of doctors who are, you know, coming out of the shadows and admitting that these vaccines can cause some severe problems.
I really appreciate it. What you said about pediatricians and their, for all practical intents and purposes, what they're really there for is just to vaccinate.
Exactly. And I base all of my information on quotes from other doctors. You know, my whole DVD is documented. It's not Mary Toko's opinion. I try to keep my opinion out of it, although I must tell you I get very emotional, I get very upset.
Good, we should.
because what happens is I do these public lectures all over the country, and the groups are now much bigger, you know, 80 to 150 to 200 people, including the Amish communities. And what happens is always on my break time, parents come up to me with tears in their eyes with their stories of how my baby, I've got videos of my baby just doing awesome, toddling around, you know, saying mama, daddy, bye-bye, bird, and bottle, and all of a sudden they become completely non-responsive and regress into severe autism. And, you know, it's hard for me to keep my opinion out of it, but I really, on the DVD, I try very much just to present the facts. And it's all medical documentation, scientific research, congressional hearings, quotes from famous doctors. And Dr. Mendelsohn is the one that I quote his book pertaining to the purpose of a pediatrician.
Yeah.
He is awesome. And that's the book that I tell everyone to purchase, you know. It's called Raising a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor by Robert Mendelsohn. And that's what I used as my book when I was raising my children to understand the normal infectious childhood illnesses. And he goes right on to state that the purpose of the pediatrician is to indoctrinate your children into a lifelong dependency of medical intervention. His job is to vaccinate them. And, you know, he goes on to say, if you want to have healthy children, don't take them to your pediatrician unless
exactly.
it's an emergency.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, think about it. What do we do at the well baby visit? Which I don't even think it should be called that. You know, and again, I go into that in the DVD, that a well baby visit, why do you need to take your baby in to a medical doctor to find out if they're well? I mean, parents, we know our babies better than anybody.
Yes.
We know when they have a fussy tummy. We know when they're tired. We know when they're hungry and want a nurse or just want to be held or just when they just want to walk you around the house. We know our babies better than anybody. Why are we taking them in to a doctor who does not know them to find out if they're well? It makes no sense.
Well, and you mentioned the obvious, the flagrant autism epidemic that coincides with the massive rise in vaccines, but also the other things that coincide with the rise in vaccines. I mean, there's a whole litany of them, aren't there? Heart disease, kidney disease, and
everything.
All the autoimmune, everything, yeah.
And how I tell parents, you know, when I'm talking to them is, look, if your child got those vaccines, your child has gotten all the toxins along with it, be grateful if your child does not have a seizure disorder or a full-blown autism or, you know, if your child has asthma, learning disabilities, hyperactivity, any kind of neurological irritation or immune system problem, it's probably related to that vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your child has dealt with it differently than the child before or after them. And a lot of it depends on the sex of the child. Boys are much more susceptible to vaccine injury because of the testosterone they produce.
Yeah.
Acts like a catalyst and drives the toxins further into the fatty tissue of the brain. So that's why most of the children who suffer with these problems are boys. But definitely, we have an epidemic of chronic illness in children across the country. And if you carefully look, I quote Dr. Harris Coulter. He is an incredible researcher. He spoke 7 different languages and has written many different books about chronic illness around the world. And he shows simultaneously how when we signed the Vaccine Assistance Act with Congress and began to implement vaccines on a wide scale, all the chronic illnesses in children began to skyrocket. Within 5 years, the number of disabled children went from 1 million to 2 million children in 5 years. And no one was looking. No one was following it. And, of course, he has, in my vaccine DVD, I show the stats of everything going up as far as chronic illness, along with vaccines.
Yeah. Mary, when did we really, Western civilization, when did we really begin to use vaccines for real? When did they really step it up?
I believe that's when we did sign the vaccine. Well, it actually started before that. They began doing experiments with children in the 50s. I was born in the late 50s. And they began tying it in with the school systems then as well.
Uh-huh.
By the time I got to kindergarten, they were lining children up in the gymnasium to take the polio sugar cube in kindergarten. And that's really how they got their foot in the door, is through the school system. And, of course, parents know, they're told all the time that you cannot get your children in school unless they're fully vaccinated. And, you know, many times that's just a bold-faced lie. It's just the government using the school systems to push their agenda, and they tie in federal funding with the schools as well.
Yeah.
So it's to the school's advantage to make sure everyone's vaccinated because they get more funding.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not about health care at all. So we started using them on a wide scale in the mid the 50s. And then it's just been a progressive, relentless adding more and more vaccines to the childhood schedule.
Yeah, they don't even think about what a little underdeveloped kidneys and livers, what that's doing to them.
No, and that's one of my biggest arguments, is there are no long-term safety studies done on what's going to happen if we give multiple vaccines with neurotoxic elements and foreign animal products and toxic mineral heavy metals. What's going to happen to that little teeny body, you know, next week, next month, 2 years from now, or 10 years from now? There are no long-term safety studies. And, again, you know, back, you mentioned in the beginning how people were right on but were persecuted because of their ideas being different. I remember when, if somebody was sick, they used to bloodlet them. They would just empty out the blood in their body, you know, and they thought that this was going to be the cure. And, you know, of course, we know now that that's definitely not the way to handle it. And I believe 15, 20 years from now, we're going to look back and go, wow, we changed whole generations.
We maimed
them. On a genetic level.
Yeah.
We completely altered the human being because of these toxic vaccines.
Yeah.
I'm hoping and praying that our world and our government comes to their senses.
Yes.
Before it's too late.
There's a lot of money involved. Big pharma.
Oh, you bet. You bet.
I guess it's a colleague or a friend of yours, Keith Wassong. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, Keith Wassong. Yes.
He sent me a really neat paper, Challenging the Theory of Artificial Immunity.
Oh, it's awesome.
I think it's exactly correct. Can you go over for us the natural exposure versus vaccine exposure?
Definitely. And I think if parents understand this one fact, they will not live in fear of childhood illnesses. Okay? First of all, I believe that childhood illnesses, and I will not call them diseases, they are not diseases, they are illnesses, that they actually help to stimulate and build the immune system. And I'll go into that. But when we get exposed naturally to an infectious agent, no matter what it is, whether it's a spore, a fungus, a mold, a mildew, a bacteria, a virus, it's through the mucous membranes of the human body. When a baby is born, many thousands of times throughout the very first day of life, they're being exposed to their environment, and it's through taking it in through their mouth and their mucous membranes. The immune system begins to immediately identify what it is and organize it and decide if it's something that's dangerous or not. And so the children thousands of times every day are going through this process. Then when they get down on the floor and they begin to crawl around and they're touching things and putting things in their mouth, that's innate wisdom. That's wisdom inside of them saying, okay, let's get familiar with our environment. Let's build this immune system so we can survive in this hostile world. That's why children many times will run fevers, have swollen glands, and have runny noses and have diarrhea, because they're taking in so many new things on a daily basis, their body is dealing with it appropriate. So when these infectious agents get down into the gut or the stomach area, many times that's when children will get nausea, or they'll have diarrhea, or they'll throw up, and they oftentimes will begin to run a fever. Now, a fever is, again, part of the body's defense mechanism to to establish a strong immune system. And parents have been taught the last 100 years that fevers are not good and they're dangerous and that you have to break a fever on a child, and that's why parents are giving their children Tylenol right and left for fevers when Tylenol's never even been studied for safety on children.
Oh,
in fact, 2,000 babies die a year from Tylenol.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So the doctors are telling them, oh, here, give them a Tylenol, whatever. Now parents just assume the fever's a bad thing, and they're suppressing the fever. Well, you'll notice in Keith's paper, he talks about the role of the fever and how important the fever
mm-hmm.
is. And at 101 degrees, our body begins to fight cancer cells. Okay? At 101 degrees. And this is guidance physiology. This isn't according to Keith Weissong or Mary Toko. It's at 101 where the body starts to send out hunters that track down cancer cells and eliminate and destroy them and other toxic things that don't belong in the body. At 102, the body begins to take, like if you have a bacterial infection, the body heats up really hot to about 102, and it begins to take nutrition from all the major organs of the body, and it stores it and pulls it away from the bacteria so that the bacteria will die off. Okay, and I believe it stores it in the spleen. Now, doesn't that make perfect sense that if you're starving the bacteria and heating them up, they're going to die? And that's why oftentimes babies get a little lethargic and a little bit lightheaded. And if we've had, if you've ever had a fever, you know what I mean. If you've ever had a flu, you go through it, and after a day or two, you're kind of fatigued and tired just because your body was deprived nutrition and you had to rest. And in a day or two, the nutrition's back out there doing what it has to do to keep you going. So parents are interfering with this process. And in reality, they're not helping the human body at all. They're hindering the immune function.
The authorities, the allopathic doctors, are telling them to do that.
Exactly. Because, you know, you have to understand where the allopathic physician's coming from. Symptoms are not good. Symptoms are to be stopped and chemically reduced to nothing because they believe that symptoms are intrinsically bad. It's the whole allopathic philosophy that supports that.
Treat the symptom.
Exactly. Whereas I'm coming from a vitalistic approach, and that is that the human body has innate wisdom, innate knowledge within it. God created it this way. It has everything in the human body has a purpose and a function. And how are we to determine when a child doesn't need a fever? I mean, there isn't that baby's body that it picked up off the ground outside. You know, kids pick up everything and put it in their mouth when they're toddling, and they have a bacteria in their body going crazy. You have to kick on this high fever to kill off the bacteria. You know, are we really helping our children by suppressing the immune function and getting rid of the fever? Absolutely not.
So it's like bloodletting.
Exactly. Parents need to be brainwashed. They need a washing of the brain.
Wow. On
what's most important. And so anyway, they must understand that this is normal immune function. And, you know, throwing up and diarrhea and fevers and hives and rashes are all part of immune development and immune function. In fact, usually a rash is the final stage. You know, that's when the doctor goes, oh, chicken pox, oh, measles, you know, the swollen glands, oh, your child has mumps. That's the final stage. That is the body appropriately dealing with it and kicking it off. Okay? And that's usually when they diagnose it and say, oh, we've got and they call it a disease. It's not. It's infectious illness that will come and go if we do not interfere. Now, sometimes the immune system needs a few exposures in order to get a lifelong immunity. That's why some kids will have a light, you know, case of chicken pox, and then they'll have another case of chicken pox. Most people, though, will have one good case, and then their body learns and knows, and then whenever they're exposed, their body deals with it internally. You don't even know you've been exposed again. That's the beauty of long-term permanent immunity. So when your body's going through this, the immune system is made up of detoxing organs, the lymphatic system, thousands of lymph nodes, lymph vessels, intricately connected to your glands and your tonsils, your stomach, your spleen, and your nervous system, as well as your digestive system. And then when you go through this and you get through it, your body's healthier, stronger, and more adaptable, and better to deal with the world it lives in. Okay? So that's how we get exposed to the infectious illnesses that are common in childhood. I actually, when my children would run a fever, I would pat them on the back. We never used the word sickness.
Huh.
We only said, awesome, your body's working. This means we're going to put you on the couch. We're going to make you comfortable. I'm going to give you lots of fluids. I'll make you a pot of chicken soup. You know, I'll even give you a popsicle if it makes you feel better. We're going to make sure you get liquids in your body because that's the one thing we do want to make sure is our children are hydrated when they're running high fevers. And just give them TLC. And guess what? 24 hours later, they're running around the house. They're feeling better. Their body has gone through a major aerobics for the immune system and has overcome it.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. Now, the difference between that and when you inject into the human body is huge. By the way, nothing in the human body gets strengthened by avoiding. Think about this. If you want to strengthen your musculature, you start working out, lifting weights, and adding stress to that musculature, and flab turns into fat, right?
Uh-huh.
It doesn't happen overnight. It's a gradual process. If you feel like you've been sitting around in front of the computer too much and you want to strengthen your cardiovascular system, you get on a treadmill or you start doing some, you know, exercise that's going to increase your heart rate for a good 20 minutes to start strengthening your, you know, cardiovascular. So you're adding stress to it. It overcomes the stress, and in the process, it strengthens and develops. The immune system is no different. No different than that. If you avoid the illness, you're not really helping your body to strengthen and develop. You're actually hindering it. And that's what medication and drugs do. They interfere with the normal process of immune development every time. And so if parents understand that, they won't freak out when their children are running a fever. They won't freak out if they have a rash. They won't freak out if they have swollen glands. As I said, when my children had swollen glands, I go, wow, isn't that awesome? Your body's working. Something's going on. And, you know, between the ages of 0 and 7, children go through this process on a pretty regular basis because their immune system is being exposed to so many things. By the time they're in their preteens, they're through it. They stop running the high fevers if their body's working well. And they are, and they end up being, you know, very good, strong children. So that's how I raise my kids. Now, the difference, am I talking too fast? Am I okay?
Oh, no.
Okay. The difference between that when you inject. When you inject, you're not only injecting the bacteria of virus, you're injecting all kinds of adjuvants, which we can talk about, some of the ingredients to preserve.
Yeah, we'll get into
sanitize.
That.
You're injecting. Now, you go right into the muscle. And that fluid is injected into the muscle and many times gets into the blood system. The difference is the body is totally unprepared. The immune system is not set up to deal with this appropriately. So you're catching the body completely off guard, and the body goes literally, oh, my gosh, what the heck is invading? What is this invading in that muscle in that arm or in that thigh? And it begins to have to react in a crisis. Now, oftentimes the toxins and the viral and the bacterial product get into the blood system in a very unnatural way. When you have the normal infectious illness, it does not get into the blood system. It goes through the digestive system. And so the body can respond appropriately for the immune system.
And the mucous membranes.
Absolutely. Our colon is lined with 80% of our immune system. But when you bypass that and inject, you're completely catching the body off guard, and it has to treat it like a puncture wound, really. Like if you step on something and it gets punctured. And what happens is the toxins get into the blood system, and then all of the major organs are exposed to the bacteria, the virus, and the toxins. And it circulates throughout the body, and that's what I believe is the fundamental problem with injecting vaccines into the human body, is that we're exposing the vital organs, including the brain, which is all fatty tissue, very, very absorbent, and it causes major neurological problems, and it also causes immune problems on every level.
Yeah.
So we're changing the method of exposure, which is huge. We're also changing the timing of exposure. You know, if you have a baby, and that baby is born into your hometown, that hometown has a certain flora of bacteria and viruses that are common to mom and common to dad and common to the area. And then they grow in that world and they gradually get exposed. They gradually get out into the world. You know, sure, 2 weeks they might be out shopping at the grocery store with mom or dad or at the church, but they're gradually getting exposed to infectious illnesses. And many times the diseases that were, or the illnesses that were infecting into these children by vaccination, they're being exposed all at once on one in one day. So a child will go in for their well baby visit at the age of 2 months and will get up to 7 different bacterial and viral diseases injected into the muscle all in one day. Now that is very unnatural.
Very.
That is demanding an awful lot on that immune system. Because immune systems, many times, like I said, need a couple exposures to be able to identify, contain, and isolate and deal with appropriately. We're subjecting our children to many diseases, many bacterial products, all in one day. And expecting the immune system to be able to make sense of it and have an appropriate immune reaction.
Mary, even at the at-best scenario, which would preclude the potential for disease, which you and I are pretty sure is happening, but set that aside, even the at-best scenario that the vaccines, they just don't work. I mean, is there any scientific proof that this process of bypassing the skin barrier, the mucus barrier, the digestive system, is there scientific proof that you can do that and still create immunity?
No, there is not. In fact, that's why children have to go back for booster after booster after booster,
mm-hmm.
and what they get is a short-term immune response.
So it does work short-term?
Well, what I think it does, I don't even know if it works short-term.
Yeah.
What I believe happens, and this is Mary Tocco's opinion, and
yeah.
it's based on some other research that I've kind of, you know, put together in my own head, is you'll hear them say all the time that, you know, all of these infectious illnesses are no longer with us because of the vaccines. I think what happens is we might eliminate the short-term infectious illness from actually occurring in the full-fledged, you know, response of like having chickenpox or measles or mumps or roseola, rubella, but there's an immune difference. It's a totally different thing. You cannot guarantee immunity. In fact, most people who got vaccinated in the 70s and 80s at the age of 21, 22 show no immunity to the very things that they got vaccinated against. Because it's a whole different reaction in the immune system. Is there any scientific information out there? You know what the problem is? All of the research that we get is funded by drug companies.
It's useless.
And this is my call. This is my call to the world of people who are wanting the truth to come out. We need several millionaires, billionaires, who know the truth, who are in a position to help us prove the truth, who
yeah.
can come forth with the funding and get the right safety studies done and the right testing done to prove that these vaccines do not work. That's what we need, and that's what I believe God wants. He wants Christians who are, you know, or non-Christians. You don't have to be a Christian. He wants people who believe in the truth, who have the ability to come out, because we're fighting against billions of dollars who want to keep this system going. And they have their whole agenda is not really about health care. So, no, there are no studies that I know of that will prove that vaccinations don't work because the money's just not there to prove it. I have a database of probably 150, maybe 200 children who have never been vaccinated, who are willing to give blood samples and urine samples to show that they are healthier, more vital, more robust,
yeah.
and do not suffer with chronic illness the way the vaccinated children do.
Let me tell you something while you're on that topic,
mm-hmm.
Mary. I have a buddy of mine. He's been a guest a couple of times on my show. He's a retired sergeant from FEMA, actually, the rescue guys who went in at Ground Zero at 9/11, U.S. Search and Rescue. And they were told right after the 9/11 happened that the surroundings were safe to go and search for bodies, really, and there weren't even that. But in fact, they weren't safe. They were highly toxic still.
Right.
Due to things that they still either haven't revealed or don't know. And my friend, retired Sergeant Matthew Tartaglia, what he tells me, most of the folks that were with him rescuing people are dead now.
Oh, my word.
He himself is very sick. And
oh.
But he credits the fact that he's still alive to the fact that he was never vaccinated. He tells me, as a child, he was always more healthy than his companions.
Wow. Well, you know, Michael Moore is releasing the movie called Sicko. And he talks about how he took a group of people who worked on that cleanup, The government was not helping them with their health problems. He took them to foreign countries to heal their bodies with natural medicines or natural ways. And his movie is going to be exposing what's going on.
Wow.
Pertaining to that. In fact, I would encourage that sergeant to get a hold of Michael Moore, because his movie is based on that. That here we've got people that were cleaning up after 9/11, and their bodies are falling apart afterwards, and the government has turned their back and completely ignored them. And, you know, he literally took groups of them out of the country to get the right type of care that's going to help them. So it's really a shame when our own government doesn't really want to take responsibility for what's happened.
And yet we're giving them responsibility over our babies.
That's right. Parents are ignorantly, unknowingly taking their children into that doctor with blind faith and trust, saying, here, doctor, go ahead, inject my child with all kinds of viruses, bacteria, and things that do not even belong in the human body because you say it's good for my child. And parents need to wake up. They need to realize the doctors don't even know what they're doing. The doctors need to wake up because they're consenting to this on behalf of parents, and they don't even know what they're consenting to. In fact, you know what my challenge is? My goal is to get on Oprah Winfrey, and I've got people around the country who have received my DVD who are emailing her. Dr. DeMio and I are willing to go on Oprah Winfrey and expose everything that we know as truth. And my challenge to the doctors and the nurses who don't believe what I'm saying is true is I would like all of you to agree to do this. Let's go out and let's get you ready for your set of vaccines, only let's make them size appropriate as far as the neurotoxins go. And we're going to, like, if you weigh 200 pounds and a baby only weighs 12 pounds, we're going to increase the dosage so that it's appropriate to your size and weight. And then we're going to give them all to you in one given day, and then we're going to do them every 2 months for the next year. And let's see if you can even say your name a year from now.
Wow.
You see the challenge?
Wow, yeah.
Because they claim that all babies can get all the same vaccines over and over and over again without there being any scientific proof that these things are safe. Shaquille O'Neal gets the same flu shot as a one-year-old baby.
Wow.
And so that's my challenge. Doctors, if you believe these things are safe, let's look at your weight and let's inject to you the same ratio that we're injecting into these little babies. Only we're going to do it. You know, I mean, how many doctors are going to stand up and bend over and, you know,
none.
Bare their buns? No one.
Many of them don't even shoot up their own children.
Exactly. And, you know, God bless the nurses, because the nurses are there doing their job. But many times nurses they're so headstrong that they won't even think of it on those terms. I recently ran into a nurse at a restaurant who had her little boy with her, and they were dining, two women with two little boys. And, of course, I know that boys are most susceptible to vaccine toxicity. And I turned around and just introduced myself, not knowing she was a nurse, and just said, you know, I'd like to share some information with you. Here's my card. Go on my website. I have a bunch of links to other websites. Make a fully informed vaccine decision. Please know what you're consenting to before you vaccinate your children. And that's really, I don't tell people not to vaccinate. That is their decision. But I tell them to make an informed vaccine decision. And she said, well, I'm a nurse, and I know about the mercury issue, and I know, and my daughter, who is, I think, 3 or 2, just got the flu vaccine, even though I know it had 25 micrograms of mercury in it. And I looked at her and said, are you serious? You knew that she was going to get 25 micrograms of mercury, and you still wanted her to get the flu shot? And she said, well, my doctor says it's okay.
Oh, trust authority.
And I said, do you know what the EPA safety level is for that little baby? Under 1 microgram is considered safe.
Oh, boy.
And you gave your baby a shot with 25 micrograms of mercury. And then I asked her the same thing. Are you willing to take the same shot with maybe, do you weigh maybe 120? Let's increase the mercury load so that it's equal to your weight. Are you willing to take the same vaccine with, you know, 250 micrograms of mercury in it? And she looked at me and her face kind of went, wow, I never thought of that. And I said, what do you think might happen to you? You might drop over dead. You might end up with seizures. You might end up with chronic fatigue. You might have, lupus a year from now. You might not be able to spell your name. You see, they don't think things through.
Well, nurses and doctors, they're in the belly of the beast, so to speak. They're propagandized more than anybody.
Exactly.
Mary, what are some of the toxins in these vaccines?
Well, first of all, you've got the very viral component that they're being, you know, that they make and what they do, and I'm going to get to that section so I can quote it exactly. I want to read through my list quickly because there are so many, and I'll just cover the main ones. We have phenol, which is a poison, formaldehyde. We know that's used in embalming people. Alum is a preservative. Acetone is used in nail polish remover. Aluminum phosphate is in every vaccine. It's used in deodorant. It's very toxic. Glycerin is toxic to the kidney, liver, can cause lung damage, gastrointestinal damage, and death. We have MSG, monosodium glutamate. When I'm having a live audience, I ask them to raise their hands if they're allergic to MSG. 5% usually are.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ask them, how do you know if your two-month-old baby is going to be allergic to MSG? No one knows. We don't know what those babies are.
When they're screaming after, I suppose?
Right, the screaming, the crying, the swelling, the lethargic, we don't know. And, of course, the doctors, you know, when they call and say, my child is screaming and won't go to sleep and has a high fever and lethargic, it's, oh, well, it's not related to the vaccine. How do we know? There's toxic heavy metals, lead, aluminum, cadmium, mercury, which is a form of thimerosal. None of these are easily eliminated and can cause severe neurological damage, as well as other life-threatening health problems. There's fecal matter, horse serum, calf serum, urine, and chick embryo, dog kidney, pig blood, rabbit brain, sulfates, yeast proteins, antibiotics, as well as unknown amounts of RNA and DNA from animals and human cell tissues that they grow the viruses on. They have to take parts out of animals, and so they're decomposing parts, and then they grow the viruses on those parts because viruses won't grow on healthy tissue. Excuse me. Many of the growth mediums are known to be contaminated with retroviruses that are foreign to humans, rare genetic materials such as DNA and RNA. For example, the live polio vaccine contains SV40, which is simian virus number 40, which is also from the simian green rhesus monkeys, because that's what they do. They kill these monkeys in Africa, and they take their kidneys, and they grow the polio vaccine virus on it, and then they scoop it off. Well, when they scoop it off, they're getting retroviruses along with it. In fact, there was hearings in Washington on September 9th of 2003 by the Subcommittee on Human Health and Wellness. It also included the Government Reform Committee, chaired by Congressman Burton, and many other associated committees were there. And they were talking about the association of SV40 with brain, bone, and lung tumors found in children and adults today from their vaccinations. That vaccine, by the way, was used until the late 1990s. That's only one virus out of the 26 we know that came along with that, those polio vaccines. Okay? And what they do to produce the vaccines, they gather the sick, infected people or animals from around the world, and they take their urine, their blood, pus, or feces. They get the virus out of those components, and they grow them on toxic mediums, like I said, decomposing animal organs, baby hamsters, African monkey kidneys, chicken eggs, and now the one that they're growing them on because they're more user-friendly are the aborted baby lung tissue.
Oh.
Once the virus is grown, it is pulled off, inactivated with formaldehyde, aluminum, or other agents. Then it is preserved with toxins that are unnatural, synthetic, immune-suppressing, and or carcinogenic to the human body. And that's basically how they make them. And the manufacturers admit that their factories where they make these are the most unsanitary and unclean areas you could even imagine. And people who create these vaccines walk around in moon suits because they know that they could become very ill, very sick.
Wow.
It's crazy.
And we're injecting that into our babies.
Absolutely, in the name of health. You know, come on, Mom and Dad, you know, come to the local health department and bring your baby for the free vaccines or whatever, which are never free. Everything has a price tag.
Well, yeah, they're guinea pigs. Our babies are guinea pigs.
Absolutely. We are the guinea pigs. In fact, I don't know if I forwarded you. I just now did a overview about the new rotavirus vaccine called Rotatec.
No, I haven't got that yet. By all means,
I'll have to email
it to
you. Because there was a rotavirus is a virus that causes babies to have diarrhea, keep in mind, when babies are crawling on the ground and putting stuff into their body, the body has to get rid of it sometimes really fast, and that's why they get diarrhea many times. So we have now a vaccine to stop that from happening. Okay, and the first one that was released back in 1999 was called the Rota, the Rota Shield. And the Rota Shield was released actually in 1998, and it was only on the market for 6 months because it caused so many children to suffer with indisception of the colon. Indisception is a condition when the colon becomes inflamed, it swells up, and then it folds in on itself like a telescope. And oftentimes the only way to deal with it is to remove parts of the colon or to do an air enema where they shoot air into the colon to cause it to open up.
Oh, boy.
You can imagine how painful this is for little babies.
Yeah.
Just last weekend, a woman called me whose son had indisception, and now every year he gets bouts of it. And the only way they can fix it is with the air enema. But he'll be playing in the living room on the floor. He's, I think, 2 and a half now. And he'll collapse and just start screaming in total pain. And they have to throw him in the car, run him to the emergency room. She knows now it's indisception. He's suffering with it. They have to give him an air enema, which is very, very, you know, painful. And then he's exhausted for days after. But they pulled that vaccine because so many children required immediate surgery. And when I heard they pulled it, I was so relieved because I was actually in Washington before they released it and heard that there were serious problems during the safety studies with indisception, but that they just basically chose to ignore it and were going to release it anyway. And the new one that they now came out with actually is called Rotatec. It's the safety studies on it are just amazing. I went right on to the Merck website to find out about this new vaccine. And according to Merck, 52 babies died during the safety studies. And they called it crib death.
Oh, my.
They say it wasn't related to the vaccine. And my question is, how do you know? Babies do not go through 9 months of development, come out and are thriving and doing awesome, and just die. It just doesn't happen. In fact, SIDS is the term that they call babies for the last, 80 years who die unexpectedly in a crib. They call it SIDS death because they don't know what else to call it. They stop breathing. And there's been extensive research on the causes of SIDS, and I cover all of that in my DVD.
Yeah.
I reference Dr. Vera Schreibner as well as some other SIDS experts. And so anyway, during this study, I was sitting at my office doing my research, actually did a review of this vaccine for the Mothering magazine. I'm one of their experts on their website. And they asked me to do a review. And I was sitting there reading through the literature, and I heard, when I read 52 babies died, I broke down and I sobbed. Mm-hmm. I thought, my gosh, what are we doing to these babies? How can you console parents whose babies were part of an experimental vaccine and die? How many more babies are going to die and they're going to call it SIDS instead of calling it vaccine toxicity injury or vaccine-caused death?
Isn't it true, recently, a few years back, but pretty recently, that in Japan, they bumped back their vaccinations, I think, from infancy to just 2 years old. I wish they would have done it altogether, but when they did that, they bumped it back like 50%, and they decreased their SIDS rate by 50%?
Absolutely. That took place after a hearing we had in our government. There were 10 countries present. And Harold Coulter, one of the gentlemen that I refer to often in my talk, was in attendance because he's a medical researcher. He is a PhD medical researcher who speaks 7 languages. So he was attending this conference on SIDS to find out what they were going to uncover or say was causing the SIDS in our country, because our country has the worst SIDS rates than any industrialized country. We have worse SIDS rates than third world countries many times. Okay.
Wow.
And what they found out was Japan thought, the question was asked, how do we know the difference between a vaccine-induced death and respiratory failure or SIDS? And none of the panel of experts could answer it. So they went back and said, you know what, we're going to try this. We're going to bump back the mandatory age for vaccines to 2 years of age and see how it affects our SIDS rates. 50% of the parents opted out of the vaccine program and didn't get their children vaccinated before the age of two. SIDS rates dropped by 50% within 1 year. Doesn't that say just volumes and volumes about what's going on in our country?
It ought to.
And, you know, we have the SIDS Foundation. And I've been in contact with the SIDS Foundation on a couple different times. And I have emailed them, and I was actually invited to attend their SIDS conference just last year. And I emailed them back and said, who on the panel is going to be discussing the relationship between vaccination and SIDS? And I was told that it's not on the agenda. And I said, when you have this on your agenda, contact me. I'll be happy to attend. In fact, I'll be happy to be on your panel. But if you're not covering this information, I'm not wasting my time.
Yeah.
There's no reason. Because they still say it's respiratory failure for no known reason. And, you know, it's one of those areas where SIDS is a blanket all diagnosis for death when the doctors don't want to face what's really happened.
Mary, this is a tiresome old dead horse that we have to beat. But
I know.
You know that so many people who are totally unversed in this, because they've been propagandized, they will ask us incredulously, but wait a minute, vaccines cured polio and smallpox, and they have this false, bogus history in their heads. What's the real story? I hate to even go into it, because I know
it. Oh, we have to. It's very important, because
yeah.
You have to understand that our government and every health department you ever hear speak on the news, the first thing they open up and say, because of our, you know, smallpox pink campaign, smallpox has been eradicated from the face of the earth. That's the only, by the way, the only illness that they ever can take claim to, which they really can't even take claim to, but it's the only one that's been eradicated. All the rest are not eradicated. We have polio happening all over in third world countries all the time. And the reason that the United States has seen a decrease in the infectious illnesses, according to the, let me get my notes so that, here we go, the World Health Statistics Annual, in 1973 through 1976, they studied this very topic. Their quote says that there had been a steady of decline in infectious diseases in most developing countries, regardless of the percentage of vaccines administered. They believe that these diseases disappeared as a result of improved sanitation, improved water supply, improved personal hygiene, and better nutrition. In addition, diseases for which there were no vaccines also declined dramatically, such as scarlet fever and typhoid. From 1850 to 1940, diseases had declined by 90% and were at an all-time low just when vaccines started to be introduced. Now that says it all. The death rate was almost non-existent. In third world countries where improvements were made in the same way, diseases declined in general without any vaccines. Now, I'm going to quote one more reference, and then I'll get into a little bit of an explanation of what it was like living in early America. Another study called The Sociology of Health and Illness, the fifth edition by Dr. John and Sonia McKinley. They basically did a study. It was a think tank of people that did the study, and they wanted to see the effects of modern medicine in society and see the role that it played in improving our quality of life. And what they discovered, and this is a quote from the paper, it is estimated that at most 3.5% of the total decline in mortality since the 1900s could be ascribed to medical measures induced for the diseases considered. They go on to say, furthermore, medical measures were introduced several decades after marked decline had already set in, having no detectable influence in most instances. 3.5% may be improvement from medical measures. Okay? And that paper, by the way, has never been debated for its accuracy. It has never been disproven. It is a study that was done by a group of medical doctors, but of course it's very well hidden from the public and no one talks about it. Now, you have to imagine living in early America on farms, growing our own crops, No refrigeration, no toilets, outhouses close to the home, no clean water to drink or to wash with. Living with the animals, living with their waste. Many times we lived with their feathers and their furs. We had improper food storage with problems with rats and other rodents and bugs and worms and everything else infesting our food source. And the small cities were literally cesspools of waste and filth. And that is when all of the infectious illnesses were very, very prevalent. You see, if mom wanted to do her laundry, she either had to go to the local river and bathe herself, her children, and oftentimes get drinking water from that river, doing her laundry and everything else. You know, not realizing that, you know, 5 miles up the road, animals were bathing in that very river, washing and drinking, and people were doing everything in that river.
Yeah.
That was their only source of water. And the wells were very shallow, if they had wells at all. And oftentimes the outhouses were right next to the home. They had their animals in their homes many times. They would, you know, depluck the chickens in their kitchen and blood would be all over. They took their feathers from the goose and the chickens into the house to make feather beds. They were infested with fleas. I mean, there are so many things that were unsanitary that we were bringing into our life that caused us to be ill and sick. And, you know, of course it takes many generations to build natural immunity. And so people would get plagues and would die. And it had to do with the lack of sanitation. As we began to put chlorine in the water to clean it, we began to add sewer systems and got rid of the outhouses, began to have wells that were deep. And of course sewer, you know, the sewers were huge. And now we have water systems that purify water. That everything changed. Everything changed. So that's really why the infectious illnesses have disappeared.
Hygiene.
Hygiene, absolutely.
Yeah.
And better nutrition.
Well,
you know, back in those days,
yeah,
you could only eat what you could grow and what you could store in the root cellar. Well, bugs and worms get into food and rats and rodents. I mean, you know, they used to hang raw meat with salt on it to dry out and to cure. I mean, it wasn't refrigerated. Can you imagine not having a refrigerator in your house? How would you keep your food from spoiling? So it was just a whole different world.
Yeah.
And,
well,
you know, we're very blessed to have all of these things that allow us to, you know, not be constantly dealing with infectious illnesses.
Well, and with polio specifically, which I guess the real big epidemics were in the early part of the 20th century, have you ever seen charts of where and when they sprayed DDT?
I've never seen the correlation, but I would not be surprised that, you know, we are definitely dealing with a lot of things in our environment that, you know, before we knew how bad DDT was, you know, there's probably a zillion things we're doing now. I mean,
yeah,
think of what our children are living with that you and I didn't. I don't know how old you are, but I'm in my 50s. We didn't live with the chemicals and the products that these kids are being raised with now.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I have not seen the correlation between DDT and polio myself personally.
Okay. Yeah, I not too long ago I was looking at a website, had some charts. They looked pretty, boy, they matched up pretty well.
I wouldn't doubt it, you know. All of these things affect the immune system and the nervous system, and the nervous system controls the immune system. So we're really being bombarded with chemicals and toxins. And a lot of people would like to blame the environmental toxins, blame autism for that. And I believe that it may play a role, definitely. I'm not denying that there aren't a tremendous amount of, you know, environmental causes or contributing factors to autism. But I believe the number one cause of autism is the injecting into
yeah.
the human body,
yeah.
you know, mercury and other things. You hear the people say, the professionals say, if you're pregnant, don't eat what? Fish.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And I ask this in my groups. What are you told to avoid while pregnant or nursing your babies? Fish. Everyone knows the answer. Why? Because of mercury. Well, you can handle mercury a whole lot better when you're eating it, ingesting it. There are certain things in the human body that are set up to deal with it and carry it out of the body appropriately through the digestive system. Okay? There's a whole difference between ingesting mercury or thimerosal versus injecting it. it's much, much more toxic when we inject it. Mm. So if mothers who are developing babies are being told to avoid eating it, why are we injecting mothers who are developing babies with flu vaccines that contain 25 micrograms of mercury?
Because Big Pharma's got a vested interest.
Exactly. And that's a question I would ask any medical doctor. Okay. Would you tell your pregnant mom to go out and eat fish 3-4 times a week? Why will you, as her doctor, encourage her to get a flu vaccine with 25 micrograms of mercury in it while she's developing her baby, which is going to bypass the placenta and get into that baby and cause neurological problems?
Wow.
Doctors don't even think. They don't ask the critical questions. Is this good for the baby? And, you know, another thing that I expose is that mothers were given Rogam shots while developing their babies. By the thousands, if not the millions. We have Rogam is for women who are Rh negative, uh-huh. And that means that they have negative blood, and if the father had positive blood, there's a child that there's a chance that the developing baby could be positive blood, and then if the mother and baby's blood mixes during the birthing process, the next baby, if positive, could have some danger of injury and not developing properly. So it used to be where they gave a Rogam shot after the baby was born to fight off any positive blood antibodies the mother would have built up. Okay? I'm Rh negative. I know all about this. Well, I found out Dr. Mark Geyer, who was appointed by Congressman Dan Burton to look into thimerosal in young medications, drugs, and vaccines, I found out that for many years, women were being injected up to 3 times while carrying their babies with the Rogam shot, just in case that baby was a positive blood baby. That means they got 75 micrograms of mercury injected to them while they're developing that baby.
Wow.
No safety studies are done. None. On whether that can affect the child or not. Now, if mercury, thimerosal, is one of the worst neurotoxins on the face of the earth known to humanity, how can it be safe? How can it be safe? So,
wow.
We wonder why some children are now born with signs of autism. I believe that's one of the reasons why.
Mary, are you still working on a DVD promoting natural health for children? You mentioned that on your other DVD.
That is in the plans. I'm looking for funding, and the DVD would be How to Raise Children Nature's Way. Basically, my ex-husband Sam and I, we raised our children totally non-allopathically. We, you know, raised them with a vitalistic healthcare approach, and basically what that means is we did not utilize drugs or medication for any reason unless it was a medical emergency, which, by the way, we only had a couple. And, you know, my oldest daughter is 27. She is now a chiropractor. My youngest is 14. We only had 2 visits to the emergency room for broken bones during that whole period of time, and we used no medications. We needed no antibiotics, no prescriptions. I think my 14-year-old had his first aspirin for pain last year when he got hit in the head with a basketball right on the nose. He had never had an aspirin before that, and we were out of town, and he had a headache, and my mother offered him an aspirin. And he said, I don't know, I've never had one. And she laughed. She said, that's amazing. 14 years of age, and you never had an aspirin. He never needed one.
Yeah.
And so I raised my children this way, and on the DVD, I want to give parents enough information about the normal infectious illnesses that will cause fevers and stuff, and try to encourage them to allow their children to run through the course of immune development. And I give them ways, like natural ways of dealing with things at home, like an ear infection, for example. My children, we lived on a lake, and my children swam in the water all summer long. And once in a while, someone would get an earache, which I assumed it was from swimming in lake water. And how we dealt with it was I would start out with a peroxide flush in the ear. Let it bubble, put the peroxide in, and let it bubble out and do it a couple times. Oh, God, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, our electricity just went off. We're in the middle of a storm.
Oh.
I thought I almost lost you on the phone. But anyway, after we would do that a couple of flushes, we would then put warm olive oil in the ear and put a hot pad or a electric pad on the ear and just have them rest on the couch. And they always got over it within a matter of a couple hours. And that's a natural remedy.
Yeah.
That parents can use for ear infections, which, by the way, ear infections have increased hundredfold because of vaccines.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of research as to why vaccines cause ear infections. But that's a natural approach of dealing with ear infections at home. You know, there are a lot of little tricks of the trade that you learn when you're not putting medication and drugs in their mm-hmm. little bodies to stop the symptom. Now, does that mean a parent should never use pain medication? No. I don't make that decision. I just tell them that there are ways that they can help the body and assist the body in healing naturally.
Yeah.
That are more harmonious to the human body. And so the DVD is going to focus on a lot about what is normal immune function. There's so much good information coming out about that now because of AIDS research that, you know, the doctors are learning a lot more about immune function and how it actually works. And so I would bring a lot more of the research about that in and then talk about how to raise children nature's way. I'm a big advocate of natural birth. I had 4 of my babies born at home with midwives.
Wow.
I reference doctors as to why the hospital is the most dangerous place to have a baby and why. I mean, there's a good reason to not have babies in hospitals. I talk about how to raise children utilizing chiropractic and massage and herbs if you need it, you know, to assist their little bodies as they go through all the challenges.
Well, Mary, give us your website and any parting comments you have.
Okay. I would like to encourage parents, first of all, to don't even trust me. Part of the reason our country is the way it is because of blind faith and trust. And I do what I do because I believe that's what God has called me to do, and that's just share information and encourage parents to make informed vaccine decisions. Number one, you have a right to make that decision. It is totally your choice, and every state has ways that you can get out of vaccinations, whether it's a philosophical exemption, a medical exemption, or a religious exemption. If your children are already immune compromised, a medical doctor should be willing to give you a medical exemption for any further vaccines. If you have strong religious convictions about things like aborted babies being used to develop vaccines or putting neurotoxins into the human body, then you could use a religious exemption. And I do have biblical reasons supporting not vaccinating our children available, which people can get by emailing me. I also know that if you live, there's only 15 states that have philosophical exemptions. If you have that exemption, use it. Educate them in the health department. Educate them in your school systems as to why you do not want to vaccinate your children. You know, I found that, you know, my children were in private Christian schools, they were in public schools, they've been in colleges, we homeschooled, we did it all. And I found it a great opportunity to go to that college nurse and say, do you know why I don't vaccinate? Let me give you some information. And I would give them, I made something called Vaccine Facts to Consider. It's an 18-page report that I sell to people for $10, and then they can make as many copies as they want. And I would hand them one of those and say, you know, this is why I don't vaccinate. And know that the people who don't vaccinate are people who have done their research and know what's in vaccines. And they're truly the ones that don't vaccinate. And so if your child is already injured from vaccines, there is a whole new medical protocol that you can do to help your children recover. Some children are completely recovering from autism if it's caught soon enough. Some children, their behavior is improving dramatically. Some are speaking again, looking at the parents again. Some children don't respond. It's very difficult to know who is going to respond, but there's a whole protocol, and I encourage you to go to the vaccinereresearchinstitute.com, and you can find out all about this. I also go into it in detail on my DVD. Dr. Philip DeMeo is a doctor now, and the one who his own son became injured. He has dedicated his life now to helping these children recover as best as he can. And I give his information. He's on my DVD talking about what they're doing to help these kids. So there is hope for those that are autistic, hyperactive, diabetic, asthmatic. There's hope for these children to recover somewhat. You just have to know what to do.
Uh-huh.
Having said that, my website is marytoco.com, and marytoco.com. And you can email me from the website. You can order my DVD from the website and pay with PayPal. If you want to order it directly from me, I will give you my my business number, and you can call me with credit card information, or you can mail me a personal check or money order. And my telephone number is 231-642-7984. And with that, I really want to thank you for this opportunity to get this information out to parents. I think the timing is critical. Our country is ready for the full truth. And my prayer is that people will listen to this and will take action.
Mary, I thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. I'm honored.
Yeah. Okay. Well, God bless you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That is the way things are.